The next case is 08-824, Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus Annie Venenzio. Ms. Venenziano.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Anne DeVenenziano, and I'm the respondent in this matter. Your Honors, at the outset, I would like to tell you that I sincerely regret the circumstances that bring me before you today. More important, I regret my role in these circumstances, specifically the failure to file and pay payroll taxes and the fact that I have 17 liens. Having said that, I would like to explain but not excuse by letting you know something about my background. Your Honors, I have spent most of my life in the pursuit of academics that have nothing to do with business. I've studied social work, medicine, the law, and psychology. I never took a business curriculum in law school because it was elective, and I never took tax in law school because it was elective. After graduating from law school at some point thereafter, I thought that I might like to become a tax lawyer. I investigated this, and I enrolled in an LLM program at Case. I attended 3 classes, after which I realized that I was completely in over my head because of my lack of background. I withdrew from that program. Your Honors, after I learned that payroll taxes existed and had to be paid, I took steps to address this matter and to cure it. I contacted Doug Carlson, a tax lawyer from Hahn, Lozier & Parks in Cleveland. I went to him, Your Honors. He contacted the IRS on my behalf. The IRS understood that my omissions resulted from naivete and ignorance, not by any willful actions. And while it embarrasses me to let you know that I was so naive, the fact is I was. The Board of Commissioners found my testimony to that effect lacking in credibility in light of my level of education. But as I've explained, my level of education had nothing to do with what brings me before you today. Once I contacted Mr. Carlson, and once we were in touch with the IRS, we set about to cure this. Your Honors, when I went into practice almost 13 years ago, I did it with the intention of vigorously and zealously representing my clients. I relied upon my husband, a certified public accountant, to handle the business aspect of my practice. I realize now that that reliance was inappropriate and misplaced. Once I learned this, I separated myself from him business-wise. I filed separate taxes. My husband is no longer involved in my business. I work with an enrolled agent by the name of Brian Green in Chesterland, Ohio, who gives me guidance now on tax matters and on business matters. I have learned a very difficult lesson, but had I known then what I know now, I would not be before you today.
Did it not occur to you that if you have employees working for you, that you have some obligation to contribute to Social Security system fund?
No, Your Honor, it did not.
Because your husband told you that that wasn't necessary? Is that, was there a discussion about it? I mean, we have a couple of people here who, whose credit for apparently, according to the board, whose credit for in the Social Security system is diminished by the non-payment of the payroll taxes. Is that correct? Do you agree with that?
I don't know if their credit is diminished, because my understanding about the Social Security system is that the most recent three payments, salaries, pay stubs, is what contributes to the Social Security system. Again, I'm not making excuses for my ignorance. I'm simply telling you that I was ignorant about it, and that when it was brought to my attention, I did consult with my husband, who reiterated my position, his position rather, that I didn't have to do this. And when I finally had a question about what he was saying, this is when I sought out the services of Mr. Carlson.
Ms. Veneziano, would you turn to count five, the IOLTA account? That is the area that is troublesome to me as well. And explain the use of that account.
Are you referring to the
count five of the?
I don't have it in front of me, Your Honor. I presume you're referring to the matter with Clifford
yes.
Thornton. Your Honor, Mr. Thornton is a client and is a friend. And Mr. Thornton had received a payment on a personal injury settlement. And I didn't realize till the day of the hearing, actually, that had been a larger payment and that he had spent half of it. He approached me and asked me to put $29,000 into my IOLTA so he wouldn't spend it, so that he could have it for taxes, he could have it to support his daughter who'd recently had twins. He wanted me to protect it. Since he was my client, this was a trust account, I felt that it was okay to put it in the trust account. When he needed money, he asked me and I got it for him. And that was the extent of it. And before, well, some time before, I came in front of the panel, but at the point after which I had been charged with this, my attorneys, Jeffrey Stern and Barry Freeman, said to me that this was not a violation, but it was not neat. And so I withdrew the money and we placed it into a different account. But it was placed there solely to protect Mr. Thornton's funds. Your Honors, I would like to underscore something. The Board of Commissioners did note that I've never had any prior disciplinary violations. But they didn't note a few other things. They didn't note that I cooperated fully with the bar. They also didn't note that I submitted 10 letters of recommendation from colleagues and from one client who characterized my representation on behalf of her son as a blessing. When we had the hearing, three people testified on my behalf. One was a client who told the board that I went above and beyond the call of duty in representation. Actually, there were four people, sorry. Two attorneys spoke on my behalf, Roger Kleinman and Mark Marine. Both of them testified to the fact that I work with them closely in matters in which I feel the need for more seasoned guidance. So I work with them as co-counsel. They testified to the fact that they know how far I go to protect my clients and to represent them. And they testified to the fact that I care deeply about my clients and that I'm a person of integrity.
Counsel, what would your recommendation or what would your desire be for our imposition of a penalty here?
Thank you, Your Honor. My desire would be two things that the bar recommended and one thing that they did not recommend. I agree with the idea of my having a mentor because I think I need it. I never had that, and I think I need it. I also agree with their recommendation that I take continuing education classes in law practice management. Originally, the bar had recommended 6 credits. It was I who asked to take more than that, and so they ultimately recommended 12 credits. And finally, I would ask that in light of the fact that my actions were not willful, I would ask that you lessen the sanction to that of a public reprimand.
So you do say, though, that the finding of the violation is appropriate. It's just that you disagree with the 12-month suspended.
Yes, ma'am.
So in other words, the difference is between a public reprimand and what is recommended.
Yes, in light of the fact that my actions were out of ignorance and naivete.
In this instance, part of the claim is that you did not pay personal income taxes for the years 2001 through 2005.
Correct.
Is that because you thought your husband had done it, or you didn't know that you had the obligation, or what was the, what is your version of the failure to pay those taxes?
Your Honor, my version is that in our household, my husband handled tax matters being a CPA.
Yes.
I thought that he had taken care of it.
But you would have had to sign the return, would you not?
Yes. Yes. And he would put returns in front of me and say, sign here. I would look at them. They seemed fine, and I would sign it. So I knew about the ones that were filed, but I didn't really know about the ones that weren't filed.
Does the record contain any indication as to whether these taxes have been since paid in full?
They have been filed, Your Honor. They have not been paid in full. My husband is on a payment plan with the IRS, and I am working with Brian Green in negotiations with the IRS.
What is the amount of money we're talking about?
The total?
Yes.
I don't know the division between the payroll and the personal taxes. It's approximately $150,000.
In the hearing on this matter before the panel, did your husband personally testify to the things that you're relating to us?
No, but he submitted an affidavit, Your Honor.
Counsel, did your husband pay or file taxes for both of you from 2001 to 2005?
Not always. He has now. They are all filed now.
During the time period in question, you just said that your husband would submit a tax return to or filing to you. You'd sign it, and then he would file it. Did
Correct.
He, in fact, do that from 2001 through 2005?
There were times when he did not. But since...
Okay, now...
I'm sorry.
There were times that he did not, and you didn't say, honey, where's the income tax?
Yes, I did. I said, honey, where's the income tax?
And he said, we're not filing this year?
No, he didn't say that. What he said was, I filed an extension, and it's due on such and such a date. And when such and such a date arrived, I did say to him, honey, what about this extension? And he said, well, this extension can be further extended until such and such a date. And then at such and such a date, he would put it before me, or not, but when he did, I would sign it. And frankly, when he didn't, I think that I omitted to say to him, why aren't you giving this to me? I would ask him on 2 occasions, and then I omitted to ask him again. Not out of willfulness, but because I didn't think about it further than the 2 times that I would have asked him about it.
The stipulations indicate that they say, stipulation 10, respondent has or had 17 tax liens filed against her as a result of failure to timely file federal. Were you unaware of these 17 tax liens?
I was unaware of those 17 tax liens. In fact, I didn't even know that one could arrive at them on the docket. It was pointed out to me, and then I went and looked. I know, I
no
sound.
No notice, you got no notice that their tax liens, 17 tax liens were filed against you, that you had no notice of those?
Well, Your Honor, the notices went to the house and I didn't see them. My husband took the mail and he, I thought, was dealing with it. So I did not receive notices. Your Honors, I am not trying to excuse what happened. I really want you to understand that. I'm not trying to excuse it. I'm deeply sorry that I was this naive. I really am. And believe me, I'm not this naive anymore.
I guess the problem with the case is that with your, I mean, obviously you're being candid with us and so forth, but you're really suggesting we kind of set a very low standard for lawyers to pay attention to what's going on. There are legal obligations, if you will, and particularly legal obligations to these employees, these two persons who, if the relator is correct, who will have a diminished retirement benefit because of your, or you can say your husband, but your failed obligation to provide for them. I mean, all of these non-payment of taxes, all the taxes mean that you and your husband had substantially, I would guess, more disposable income because you weren't paying the government. Is that true, or is that not true?
I think that is true.
So what do we say as a standard for lawyers who are in your situation? It's okay to say, I didn't know what was happening or what was going on. I didn't have any responsibility for it. I think you take responsibility, do you not?
I do. Absolutely, I do. And I would never suggest that you diminish a standard for a lawyer. But I do suggest that it is possible for somebody not to know. And the problem with not knowing is that you don't know where your ignorance lies because you don't have a frame of reference for it. And that's the situation in which I was in. Believe me, I'm not in that situation anymore, and I will move heaven and earth to make sure this never happens again. But that is the situation that I was in at the time.
Thank you, Ms. Benanziano.
Thank you.
Ms. Mandel.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Ellen Mandel on behalf of the relator. To follow up on what the respondent just said, it strains credulity that an attorney could come into this court and say she had no frame of reference with respect to the payment of payroll taxes and personal income taxes. She testified at the hearing that she was a lifeguard when she was in high school and she got paid. There were withholding taxes taken from those paychecks. She was a social worker at University Hospitals. She got paid. There were withholding taxes taken out of that paycheck. She got a W-2 at the end of the year. She worked at a law firm where she was a salaried associate attorney. She got paid. There were withholding taxes taken from those paychecks, and she got a W-2 at the end of that year. So to say that she had no frame of reference, no way of knowing that she didn't know that there was such a thing as payroll taxes, just belies credibility.
Counsel, did the employees receive any documentation from the law office with regard to their yearly earnings so that they could pay their or file their income tax?
I believe that they did not, and it was one of the associate attorneys in her office who actually brought it to her attention and said, wait a minute, you know, where are the W-2s? Where are the 1099s? Because some of these were independent contractors. Which then, I think, caused the respondent to ask her husband, who said she doesn't know what she's talking about, don't worry about it. One can't be willfully ignorant and rely on that, on something that pretty much everybody knows about.
She had employees.
I'm sorry?
She had employees.
She did.
How many? How many employees?
She had, over various courses of time, paralegals and I think a secretary, so maybe two at a time at the most, but multiple over the course of time.
And an attorney associate was an employee?
She had an associate attorney who I believe she had one that was working for her, and then she had somebody who was sort of like co-counsel or independently.
She said it was the associate attorney that pointed out the lack of...
I believe it was.
Okay. Were these people paid their gross salary then, or were deductions made from their checks?
There was no testimony about that, so I can't speak with authority.
Wouldn't that be indicative of how ignorant she was? I mean, if they were, say a secretary was making $10 an hour and she got paid her gross pay every time, that would be a pretty clear indication that this lawyer didn't know what she was doing. Now, if there were deductions for all of the things they're supposed to be deductions for, that would be an indication she did know what she was doing.
The problem with that, Your Honor, it's very clear that she was giving gross salaries to her employees. The problem with that is it's okay for them to be ignorant. They're not entrusted with anybody else's money or anybody else's well-being. They're there to be secretaries, clerical workers.
Okay, but then I have a little trouble with the notion, as strange as it might seem, that it stretches credulity to believe that she didn't know what she was doing, because if she's giving them the gross pay, then she's paying their income taxes out of her pocket.
I don't think that she actually issued the checks herself. I think that she may have relied on her husband to do that. She may have relied on a staff person to actually write the checks. But
she was paying them gross pay and not net pay.
That's correct.
Were they issued a 1099 then?
She did not. No W-2s, no 1099s were issued. And it was just this affiliated attorney who brought it to her attention, noticing it as to, I think, one of the employees was not getting payroll deductions. Every April 15th, the entire country goes into a frenzy about taxes. There isn't a political commercial on TV now for the presidential campaign that doesn't talk about taxes. I don't understand how a sentient adult in this country can be ignorant about taxes, payroll taxes, income taxes, state taxes. I just don't see how the court can believe that somebody with an advanced degree could get all the way through that part of her life, having been an employee, and be ignorant.
If we set aside the fact for a minute that she claims to be totally ignorant on this, don't we still have the issue of the responsibility of an attorney for their office? I mean, we've disciplined several attorneys recently who let secretaries come in after hours and use their files, or didn't know they were doing it and didn't take precautions, and they were as naive as to what was going on under their nose, but yet we disciplined them. So why would we have a different standard here?
Well, that is precisely my point, Your Honor, and we do argue that, is that she had an obligation to monitor what was going on in her office and make sure that it was compliant with the law, make sure that people weren't doing things that they weren't supposed to do, make sure that she was doing those things that she was supposed to do.
And you're not seeking actual suspension. It's a state suspension.
We asked for a 12-month suspension, completely stayed. We asked for 6 hours of continuing legal education on law office management. We asked for a monitor. The board and the panel, and then ultimately the board, recommended the 12-month state suspension, 12 hours of CLEs, a monitor, and a 2-year probationary period, which we had not requested, but which we think is appropriate. As I argued in our brief, if the respondent here were applying to take the bar exam and had come before this court with this record, you wouldn't permit her to take the bar exam. Under the Stewart decision, you would have found her financial irresponsibility to be so indicative of her inability to safeguard her clients' interests and their funds that you would have forestalled her ability to take the bar exam. And I don't think a lesser standard should apply simply because she's already passed the bar. I would like also to mention, Justice Lanziger, you asked about the IOLTA count.
And the board did dismiss count five, correct?
The panel found unanimously that it was a violation. The board found that the DR didn't specifically preclude commingling of third-party funds in an IOLTA account. Mm-hmm. We chose not to file that objection on the grounds that we didn't want a bad decision to come out of this case. But I would like to point out that if that were to be the position that were adopted by the court, it would open a whole can of worms with respect to attorneys coming in. A married attorney could come in and say the money in the IOLTA account isn't mine, that I'm writing the check to my, you know, my mortgage company, it's my wife's account. You know, it's my wife's money because we share everything. It would allow attorneys to launder money. So I think it's a very dangerous, dangerous decision on the part of the board. And I would hope that if the court were inclined to agree with it, that it simply not address it in this case. But also with respect to the IOLTA account, the testimony was that $29,000 of Mr. Thornton's money was placed in the IOLTA account. More than $29,000 was given back to Mr. Thornton. And when we inquired of the respondent as to why there was more than $29,000 given back, she said it must have been interest. So she didn't even understand that IOLTA account interest doesn't go to the client. It goes to the state.
Well, and wasn't part of the problem the state of the records as well, which gets into the mismanagement of issue in a broader sense?
Her check registers are less than adequate. Mm-hmm. The bank statements themselves, we were able to reconstruct at least the train with respect to this particular set of funds. And it's interesting to note that when they were transferred out of the IOLTA account to Mr. Thornton, they were actually transferred into a payable on death account in the joint names of Mr. Thornton and the respondent. So she still kept title to the money. It's very clear to me that this is something that as a lawyer she was required to know, and her ignorance about this, again, is puzzling to me. She's a bright woman. She should be competent to handle these sort of minor things, and the fact that she didn't leads me to believe that there needs to be some serious potential consequence if this should happen again. In 2005, going back to her tax problems, after she had identified this and retained counsel, her employment taxes were not paid. One quarter, and she didn't know about it. And when she finally learned about it, she blamed her tax attorney because he was supposed to keep track of whether or not her paralegal was depositing the money into the bank on the quarterly basis. That does not seem to me to be somebody who's taking seriously the problems that have occurred in her practice and in her personal life with respect to the payment of taxes. So I think that at a minimum, a state suspension is the appropriate sanction because it gives this court the ability to come back and monitor and impose a sanction if in fact there are further violations. And if the court has no other questions, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mandel. Ms. Veneziano, sorry, use your time. I'm sorry, you saved, I'm sorry, you use your time, which may take 30 seconds.
I'm sorry, Ron, I didn't.
Let me take 30 seconds for rebuttal, if you want.
30 seconds rebuttal, thank you.
I have a question. You learned about this in 2002 first, about the failure to file payroll?
I'm not sure of the date.
Your brief says upon learning in 2002 that she was required to file employee taxes, respondent did so. That's your brief.
Correct.
Have you resolved all the tax liens with the IRS, or are you still negotiating amounts?
Your Honor, I'm still negotiating the amounts.
So in all these years of between 2002 and 2008. You still haven't resolved those issues.
We're in process. There are a lot of issues. There's a lot of money involved. And it's my understanding from my enrolled agent that there is an innocent spouse exemption that can be invoked, and that there are some negotiation of penalties and interest, and that I can be put in a payment plan, and that is the plan.
But that all these years, that still hasn't been concluded.
That still hasn't what?
That in the 6 years since you first learned this, that still has not been resolved.
Correct.
Do you agree with the statement that the relator says that payroll taxes for the years prior to 2002 have been designated as uncollectible by IRS?
That's correct. That is correct. Your Honor, I'd like to quickly, if I may, respond to relator. The gross payment is what all of my employees got. In addition, I just want to convey, I erred, but I'm not a liar. I understand that Ms. Mandel is incredulous, and I can't account for her incredulity, but what I've said is the truth. It's embarrassing. I've taken steps to correct it, but it is the truth. And while the entire country, according to Ms. Mandel, may be concerned with April 15th, I was concerned with it to the extent that I shared with you. And now I'm concerned with it every year. But I shared with you what my level of concern was at the time.
How many employees did you have that were affected?
I paid everybody the gross salaries. I never took any payroll taxes. I haven't had that many employees, but I never took any payroll taxes out until it was brought to my attention that that's what had to be done. Everybody was paid the gross amount.
But are we talking 20 people, 10 people, 5 people?
Oh, no. When I first started in practice, I had no one. It was just me. And at one point, I got a paralegal. And then, because she could only work half-time, she brought in a second one. They worked half-time. And then I didn't have anybody for a while. And then I had another paralegal who's now an attorney. And then I had a lawyer who worked for me. And Your Honors, please don't misunderstand this. I do take full responsibility for what happened. I do. But I will tell you that when my associate pointed out to me that taxes had to be paid, I went to this other lawyer who worked for me, and I told her what my colleague had said. And her response to me was, I know you'll do the right thing. And I said to her, I'm coming to you to ask you if my colleague is correct, that I need to do this. And she said, I know you'll do the right thing. Again, I'm not trying to abdicate my responsibility. I'm merely informing you of what happened.
You've used your time, Ms. Bisagnano.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.